A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
And if you would like your name included alongside those wonderful figures from the world of tennis, you can do so, although you've got a matter of hours in order to do so. We'll have many, many other tennis podcast listeners included in our intros over the next few months, because more than 30 people have signed up for intros in our Kickstarter. And yeah, I think we've got about 12 to 16 hours or whatever it is left before the thing closes as we come to you from Melbourne right now. So if you want to back the tennis podcast, we've already hit our target. But it'll all go into the pot, pay for our beers, pay for our cheese, and help us to do more with the show. And we're hugely appreciative of everybody that has backed us so far, so thank you. Matt, we sit here on Sunday in Garden Square again, third day in a row. However, we are looking up at the sky at the moment. I should say, no smoke issues in terms of air quality at the moment, but looking up into the sky, it is a really dark shade of grey up ahead of us. It's brighter behind, but the air is heavy, and all of the little emojis on the weather forecast have got little sort of lightning
bolts.
Yes,
we are here only in the name of potentially good radio with a downpour imminent, and we will have to scarper.
Yeah, most people are saying, I tell you what, let's record whatever we're doing inside because it might rain. I sort of went the other way.
Yeah, David said,
hopefully,
let's get rained on.
Hopefully we get a thunderstorm. That'll sound great. So here we are. We've been into more press conferences today. There have only been a couple of additional ones, because today it was Novak Djokovic and Ash Barty, and there were a few others that came in. I had a good chat, incidentally, which we might try and get into tomorrow's show if we can. I had a good chat with Bob and Mike Bryan, who are retiring after this year. This is their final Australian Open, 22nd Australian Open, they were explaining. And some really positive quotes from Bob Bryan. Told me that he thinks Andy Murray's going to be fine. And he said he spoke to him last week and thinks it's a completely unrelated injury to the hip problem. So, yeah, maybe there's plenty of room for optimism. We'll play that hopefully for you in tomorrow's show. And it was also nice to hear about from them about their feelings about retiring and why they're retiring. So we're also going to talk, Matt, today about the draws, and we're going to reveal to each other for the first time live on the Tennis Podcast our predictions. We're also waiting for Catherine to get her predictions in, hopefully before she gets on the flight, otherwise we're going to be a problem. But yeah, we're going to reveal our picks to each other. We do not know what each other have gone for.
I tried to have a sneak peek of yours earlier and you shut me down.
Did you?
Mm.
You didn't? Did you sneak over my shoulder?
Yes. Oh. And I think you sensed me and sort of moved your position, and I was unable to.
It's outrageous.
To have a look. Yes, it was this show last year when I. Oh, here comes a bit of rain.
Oh, crikey.
It was this show last year where I made a poor prediction in She Who Must Not Be Named in my quarterfinals.
Victoria Kuzmova.
Yes.
Who hasn't quite lived up to
any
hopes.
Sort of heights whatsoever, really.
Okay.
So I'm potentially going a little bit more cautious this year.
Oh, How disappointing. Well, we'll have to see what I've come up with. But first of all, let's just talk quickly about the other press conferences that we were in today. Novak Djokovic, how is he looking?
He was talking a lot, doing his thing of giving very, very long answers to every question. Seemed fairly relaxed, I thought. And the last question was the most interesting question. It was about the subject we were talking about on Monday's podcast, about whether the ATP Cup will have any kind of influence on his Australian Open in terms of the energy he had to put into that tournament. And he very openly admitted that yes, this was a more intense start to the season than he's ever had, and he has adjusted his training as a result. David is looking quite pleased with himself. The fact that this was something that you brought up on Monday's show, that it will affect him.
I don't think Novak was doing anything about this until he heard Monday's show.
So I took from it that he had taken steps to make himself physically prepared by reducing the length of his practice and perhaps delaying it a little bit. But we were discussing afterwards about whether he can actually prepare for what it would have taken out of him emotionally and mentally. And I think we both agree that he probably won't know until he gets on the court here.
No, we don't really know how much is expended and how much is left in the tank, whether it is replenishable, if that is a word. What I was pleased about is how candid he was and open about how big a deal that ATP Cup triumph was. In his mind, his words were, that was one of the biggest achievements of my career.
Yeah.
It's right up there, which, you know, it's a surprise when you put it alongside one another, because it's a new event and it's not even the Davis Cup. It's the ATP Cup, and we're all trying to work out what that means. But I said at the time on Monday, to him, it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. To him, it's a massive deal.
I think I kind of took his words to mean, as an individual experience, it was one of the most memorable ones he's had on a tennis court. Whether he looks back on it in 5-10 years' time when his career is over as a really important achievement, I still have my doubts about that. But I have no doubt at all that, from an experiential point of view, it was really significant.
Plus, I wonder whether if he doesn't succeed at the Australian Open, whether that might end up colouring his view of it all.
And whether he would consider next year, you know, if he crashes out here early, and next year he's thinking about whether to play the ATP Cup or not, and he thinks, well, it actually negatively affected my preparation for the Australian Open, a tournament where I've always done so well, that could be interesting as well.
Because I think it would be pretty hard for him to put in a 75% effort at the ATP Cup.
Sure. Yeah.
With all that crowd that he would have with him and all the rest of it. And that's always been, I think, a challenge for a player like Andy Murray, and maybe to some degree Rafael Nadal, but more Murray, that once you get out there and the competitive juices start flowing, I think there are some players that can slightly detach themselves and think, you know what, this isn't as important as next week. I'm not going to give everything right now. Whereas Murray used to get sucked in to the moment. And a lot of players, I think, do that.
And I think it will also be an interesting test for the ATP Cup as a competition, because it doesn't want to become a one-and-done event, which is what the Davis Cup's been criticised for a little bit in its old format, with Federer, Murray and Djokovic all winning it once and then not committing quite so much to it, maybe less so in Murray's case, but certainly in Federer and Djokovic's case. Nadal's obviously won it several times because just the strength of the Spanish team. But the ATP Cup isn't, you know, it'll be a real setback for it if Djokovic said next year, actually, I've already won that, I need to think more about the Australian Open.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. But yeah, he looked in good spirits, looked in a good place. But we'll see, and we'll see what our draw lineups and picks have unearthed in terms of what we think is going to happen to Novak Djokovic over the next fortnight. Ash Barty followed him in straight into the interview room. Quite funny, actually, that Barty walked into the interview room and picked up Novak Djokovic's pass off of the chair. He just walked out without it.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that.
Don't know whether he got stopped. And I tell you, they are quite officious here, so I wouldn't be surprised at all if Ash Barty saved Novak Djokovic's bacon somewhat with finding his pass and making sure it got back to where it belongs. She just came across to me as though she doesn't really have a care in the world. She has such a good outlook on all of this, and the overriding sense she gave was one of being excited about what's to come. She didn't back down from anything. She was asked about, you know, your picture seems like it's everywhere. What does that feel like? And she goes, it is a bit, isn't it? Mm. I do seem to be everywhere. It's a bit much, really. But she was making fun of that and really bringing it back to her team. She absolutely said that I believe I've got the best team in the world around me. And the gist of her outlook generally was, yeah, I really, really want to do well here, but it's not the end of the world.
Mm. It's the story of Ash Barty's career, really. And if you think that she had to step away from the sport for a period because she was really struggling to deal with the kind of mental and emotional toll. And she hadn't quite figured out how she wanted to tread the tennis journey in a way. Whereas mm-hmm. now she's got her own way of dealing with it, and that is bringing it back to her team, talking about them as a we rather than an I, and really embracing every opportunity. And I think she was asked about how she goes about scheduling her Australian swing, because obviously she wants to peak for the Australian Open, and yet she said, well, yes, I do, but actually what I really enjoy is just being on court in Australia and getting the support. So that's why I played Brisbane, that's why I played Adelaide, because I've done well there in the past. Well, it was in Sydney, wasn't it, where she did well before in the new event in Adelaide. But There's something more than just peaking for the Australian Open. It's about this whole month-long experience for her in Australia, where she is the biggest deal. I mean, she's right. Her face is everywhere in Melbourne. I think walking in, maybe I'll do that tomorrow. Maybe I'll count on my way in how many Ash Barty faces I pass half an hour walk.
I definitely want to give that some thought now and look around and take notice of what it is like around here, because I think that might be quite revealing when you think about it in those terms. So, yeah, I just think she's going to have a run here. You'll find out how much of a run I think she's going to have in a moment or two. Should also say I was I went down into the BBC Radio commentary box briefly for the first time at this tournament today, which is a court level commentary box behind the centre service line judge's knees, and I'm literally looking at the backside of a bloke looking down the other end of the court. But also the other thing you're looking at is the players, court level, just a few feet away, and there was Rafael Nadal practicing with, how do I say this guy's name, Jaume Munar?
Jaume.
I've done well with that then.
I believe he's Catalan, and
right.
It's a J.
Well, he looks in great shape, because Munar, and he was hitting the hell out of the ball, but he couldn't win a point. It didn't seem to matter what he did. And he was putting together beautifully constructed points, and Nadal would have the final say in the rallies. A bit like every other match he plays.
Sounds like Nadal, yeah.
It was quite something to watch. The other things that, I mean, and for a start, Munar was turning around after some of these rallies, and he was just like, he looked absolutely lost as to what else am I supposed to do to win a point? Because I'm putting together some good stuff here.
Have you been lulled into reading a lot into Nadal's practice session?
Well, you'll find out. I should also add, though, that there was one moment where Nadal didn't execute something correctly, and he went absolutely ballistic at himself, really admonished himself. The levels that these people expect from themselves is really quite something.
That is interesting, because he so rarely does that on court.
Mm. Yeah, oh yeah, exactly, and that's why it felt so noticeable. It was almost like watching a dog down the other end who's just sneezing, in the way he was sort of, it was just audible sounds of frustration coming out of him, just really having a go at himself. And I wonder whether he sort of, without because that was not a public practice session. Yeah. I wasn't doing anything wrong, but I was in a commentary box that they let the media in only for 15 minutes to watch these practice sessions. Otherwise, the place was deserted, and I just happened to be there and able to see this. It was interesting to watch Nadal's perfectionism at play right in front of you in a practice session after all these years. And I mean, he was absolutely, he looked like he jumped in a swimming pool. He was wearing the sleeveless shirt. He was doing that thing that he, Djokovic and Federer all do in practice, wearing the cap back to front.
Yes.
I don't understand why they don't do that in a match, but they always do it in a practice session.
Casual.
I wonder if it's dressing down practice sessions, is it? Or is it a branding thing that they have to wear a certain thing when they're on court, like the headbands? I don't know. So, anyway, that was Nadal. You'll find out what I think then in a moment or two. But let's find out, given that I'm the champion in the predictions.
Someone sent me an email today who's entered our predictions competition, one of our Kickstarter backers, with their picks. And they said, do you know, even if I don't win, I just hope someone beats David. He's getting unbearably smug. Which you said, mission accomplished.
Yes, I've got a whole year of this. Brilliant. And you can still enter the prediction. I mean, you've got to fork out a bit in order to do so in our Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign. There's about 10 hours to go. We've got about 30-odd teams who are going to be vying for my title and my two trophies. So let's hear what Matt Roberts thinks of what's going to happen. We basically pick the quarter finalists, don't we? That's what we do.
Quarter finalists onwards, yeah.
Right, okay.
Are we starting with the men or the women?
Start with the women.
Okay.
Who have you got in your quarter finals?
So top quarter, I have Ash Barty against Madison Keys.
Oh, okay.
The higher seed than Keys in there is Petra Kvitova. But I've gone with Keys because she seems really reliable at the slams to make the second week. I think she's made 7 of the last 9. She needs to go one step further, make the quarters to satisfy my prediction.
When you do predictions, how big an emphasis do you put on recent results like the week before?
Pretty big. And obviously Keys beat Kvitova in Brisbane. So that did come into my thinking as well, thinking that they could meet in the fourth round. Something that always bothers me when I make predictions is when someone I think is going to do well has a tough first round, and I think can they get past that? And that always makes me nervous about picking them. And Keys has Daria Kasatkina in the first round. Now, a year ago, I would have thought that would be a really tough first round, but Kasatkina, under the radar, has really fallen. She actually posted on Instagram, I think it was, towards the end of last year, saying, you know, she posted with some sort of coconut or something on the beach, saying, here's to a crappy 2019 being over, and let's bring on 2020. And it was almost exactly the same energy and vibe that Andy Murray had posted at the end of 2018 going into 2019.
When he said, what a shit year
that
was.
What a shit year, yeah. So, I mean, she is so short of confidence at the moment, Kasatkina, that I think Keys can get past her.
Quite interesting one, though, isn't it? Because you could either say Kasatkina's variety and touch might cause Keys all sorts of problems and get her out of her comfort zone, or you might say Keys is just going to blow her away.
Yeah, I think it could go one or two ways. In terms of Barty's draw, there's a big alarm bell potentially in the fourth round with Alison Risk, who beat Barty at Wimbledon last year when Barty was probably on the best run of form she's ever been in, having just won the French Open and Birmingham. And she seems really unfazed by those sort of matches and those occasions, Alison Risk. And then before that, the titleist in Hobart, Rybakina, not quite sure how you pronounce it, but she's been a massive riser over the last 12 months. She's seeded, and I'll be honest, I'm not sure I've ever seen her play other than a little bit of highlights in Hobart last week.
I saw her towards the end of last year. I remember commentating on a match of hers. I can't fully remember her, because I know I slightly got confused between her and Yastremska in terms of how they played, and I actually think it was quite similar.
Okay.
I think, you know, you're big talking hitter. About a really good ball striker, I think.
Yeah. Well, she's reached the final in Shenzhen and won Hobart already this year.
Wow.
So that's a... And I think back to someone who had similar form coming into last year's Australian Open was Kenin, who then went on to have a really good year. So
where's Rybakina in this draw? Who's she threatening?
She could meet Barty in the third round.
Oh, right.
Mm. And okay. then Alison Risk in the fourth round for Barty.
Okay.
But I'm backing Barty to get through those tests.
I'm a bit worried now. Okay.
What have you got in that top quarter?
I've got the same. I've got Barty and Keys.
Okay.
Also, yeah.
Why not Kvitova?
I mean, I am slightly a victim of recency, and there's no recent form from Kvitova that completely convinces me, and I'm not that sure about her fitness.
Yeah, she pulled out of Adelaide.
So I've just decided to go for Keys on the balance of it all.
Okay.
What you got next?
Next quarter is the loaded quarter of the women's draw, and I've gone with the two highest seeds in the section, Osaka and Serena.
Same.
This is a bit boring so far.
This is rubbish, isn't it?
I was looking at Osaka's draw and I decided it's a good draw because she's nowhere near Bencic. Bencic being the player who beat her three times last year.
I'd forgotten that.
I think Osaka's got a good draw. I think she'll get there. And I think Serena, actually, the first few rounds are fairly straightforward, and then it's potentially Yastremska or Konta, but I'm not sure about her. And the big one is whether Caroline Wozniacki can get to the fourth round meeting with Serena, which I think Wozniacki would really like to get to. We know how friendly she is with Serena.
Yeah, it'd be a good moment. It
would be a really good moment there.
Yeah. But you don't think so?
No, I don't know.
Okay. So, right then, well, what you got in your next quarter? That's two quarters done.
Oh, this one. I've been agonising over this all day.
At one point, you asked Twitter
to
tell you what to do, which I'm not even sure is fair.
Well, it wasn't very helpful, because it turns out people were also stuck on this section of the draw. Thank you for all your responses on Twitter, but there was too much division. I was hoping someone, you know, there would be a consensus.
But thanks for nothing.
Yeah. So I've gone with Sabalenka against Halep.
Okay. We've got a division then, because I've gone for Bencic against Collins. Belinda Bencic against Danielle Collins.
Yeah, I can see a world in which Collins plays Halep in the third round and blows her off the court.
That's the world that I have inhabited.
Yeah. The more I watch Danielle Collins, the more I like her. I really appreciate that she's completely happy to let out primal screams in her opponents' faces, in a way, and not give them a particularly warm handshake.
And she's quite happy for the crowd to think she's an absolute so-and-so.
Yeah.
And she doesn't give a toss.
Yeah, and I increasingly like that.
Because if you didn't see the match she played against Barty, absolutely cracking match the other day, there was a moment where she let out one of those screams that Matt references, a guttural one that made her voice break and made the crowd laugh, but she just didn't care. She'd won the point, she was off back to her chair, handshake awkward at the net where she barely even looked at Barty, and Barty kind of giggled. She obviously looked in the direction of her support team as if to say, can you believe this?
Yeah.
Can you believe her?
She's nuts.
Okay, so you've got, so what are your two again?
I got Sabalenka, who I think's coming into a little bit of form.
Yeah.
And Halep.
I kind of ummed and ahed about Sabalenka because I've long argued for what she may well do. She is one of three players who've lost their dads over the last few months. Amanda Anisimova, Arina Sabalenka, and Yelena Ostapenko, all in a very short space of time. It's been such a tough time for them. And I suppose, and Sabalenka's made it very clear and audible about the fact that she's kind of playing for her dad, and she wants to win even more now, which I can completely understand that sentiment. But I just wonder how you can carry on and be as focused as you might want to be in that sort of situation. It must be very, very difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would recommend Christopher Clary's piece. He went to Florida to see Amanda Anisimova.
Yeah.
And it's a very sensitively told piece because, you know, she is so young, Anisimova. And yeah. It's,
was she 18?
Yeah. So, you know, it's incredibly difficult for anyone losing a parent, but especially so young like that, and someone who'd been so involved in her tennis as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I strongly recommend that everyone reads that piece.
Okay. Your fourth quarterfinal is?
Again, not one I'm particularly convinced by. I think so many of the real sort of true contenders I would have put on my shortlist landed in the top half, which is why I felt more confident about that. So I've got Kiki Bertens against Marketa Vondrousheva.
Vondrousheva?
Who's back.
Vondrousheva, who you absolutely dissed.
No, that is not what I did at all. I dissed the
what was she, which category did
she was
the
did that down? Really happen?
Yeah.
Reaching the French Open final. Not because she's not a great player, which she absolutely is. It was the fact that she was missing then for the rest of the season, and it wasn't talked about.
Matt, she's starting against Svetlana Kuznetsova.
I know, it's tough.
She hasn't played in months.
She played the she played one warm up tournament to the Australian Open, and she won 75% of her sets 6-love. Vondrousheva.
Angelique Kerber is a potential third round opponent.
She's not in much form. Yeah, I'm going to stick with Vondrousheva. It was in Adelaide where she played, and yeah, she won four sets, and she won three of them 6-love.
Vondrousheva against Kiki Bertens, you say?
Yeah.
Vondrousheva, she'd have to beat Karolina Pliskova in the fourth round, potentially.
I know, but
what are you doing?
But in terms of recent Grand Slam pedigree, Vondrousheva has it.
This is ridiculous.
Why? Why is it ridiculous?
For all the reasons I've just said.
Angelique Kerber. She reached the French Open final.
She's playing a two-time Grand Slam champion in the first round. She's playing a former champion here in the third round, and she's playing the in-form player in the fourth round just to get to the quarterfinals.
Well, that's all she needs to do, get to the quarterfinal.
Well, you heard it here first,
so
folks.
You obviously haven't got one.
No, I have to say I'm much more impressed with your picks than mine in this particular section, because mine, I was so disappointed in myself to find that I'd gone for Elina Svitolina against Karolina Pliskova.
Oh, David.
So boring. But when you're the champion, you've just got to, you know, you can't mess about.
Do you genuinely think that is happening?
What?
Svitolina Pliskova?
Yeah. Why not? I mean, they're the highest seeds. They're the people who've got the pedigree.
I mean, you were talking about lack of form. Svitolina got completely blown off the court.
I mean,
Kerber's
obviously got the pedigree, but I wonder how fit she is just at the moment. I did um and ah about that for a long time. There were a number of other players I was tempted by Kerber to come through in that section and end up beating. And Pliskova, I am concerned for her against Mladenovic in the first
round.
Although I very much enjoyed Pliskova's quotes that, yeah, she's a really dangerous player, but even if she plays her best, I still think I'll beat her. Which I really enjoyed.
Pliskova is great for
I also did hover over Amanda Anisimova in the Svitolina section. But in the end, I've gone Svitolina and Pliskova.
Not Kiki Bertens?
No, and I did look up a few head-to-heads here. It's one of those sort of things where I'm looking up the head-to-head for two players that might reach the fourth round.
It is a difficult section.
Might be completely irrelevant.
I just think Kiki Bertens is due a Grand Slam run. She really did underperform in the Slams last year. I don't think she made it beyond the third round, any of them. When you consider that she's the ninth seed here, she kept her ranking up by doing well at other events. And I quite like her draw. I don't, you know, she's got Begu in the first round, then either Bondarenko or Rodionova, potentially Anisimova in the third round. That would be a really good match to see. But yeah, I just think she's due a bit of a run, Kiki Bertens. But I haven't put her in with much confidence.
It's getting really dark around here. I tell you, this storm.
It's coming.
It's coming. Right, we better crack on here. Right, okay. Who you got in these semi-finals in the women's draw?
Top half, Barty, Serena.
Same. So you've got Barty beating Keys and Serena beating Osaka, which is an interesting one. Did you um and ah about that at all or not?
I did, but their meeting in, was it Toronto they played last season when Serena played really, really well against Osaka. And, well, to be honest, I've got Serena winning the tournament, so I had to have her beating Osaka.
Okay. And then you've got in your other semi...
I'm being attacked by a fly...
It's all happening here on the tennis front. Look, you can listen to it later. Stop trying to gatecrash the podcast.
Halep Bertens, which I don't feel particularly good about. But it's there.
So who's Halep beating again?
Halep beating Sabalenka.
And then Bertens is beating...
Vondrousova.
Of course she is. So Halep Bertens, and I've got Collins beating Bencic. And so Collins up against Pliskova in my semis.
Okay.
And I've got a final of Serena Williams beating Barty and taking on Pliskova, who's beating Collins. Champion Serena.
Serena, 24.
Yeah.
It feels... I just think it's time. I just think we've been talking about this for so long.
Who's Serena playing in the final?
Halep for me.
This fly.
I'm sorry, yeah. This has been really bad last 2 minutes.
Is attacking Matt. Maybe it's related to Catherine's bee. Anyway.
At least it hasn't got a sting.
So who's Serena playing again?
Sorry, so Serena Halep final.
Right, okay.
And Serena to win and okay. Get 24.
Right, okay. Matt and me both think it's Serena 24 time, folks.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. The blokes. Let's do the blokes. So, your quarterfinals at the top part of the draw are...
Rafael Nadal against Dominic Thiem.
Same.
I originally wrote Kyrgios and I've crossed it out.
Ooh. Kyrgios to beat Nadal in round four is what you were saying that was a potential
pick. But I thought more about it And I as much as Kyrgios will be completely up for that match, I think Nadal will be as well. And there's been a slightly worrying trend with Kyrgios in recent big matches where he's, even against Nadal at Wimbledon, he was brilliant for two sets and then went away a bit in the third and fourth sets. He went back to playing not his
normal
crazy
tennis.
Chaotic tennis, yeah. And that is not going to help him against
Nadal. If he plays percentage normal tennis, he's a good tennis player. If he plays off-pace shots and drop shots and through the legs and all sorts of silliness, he's an absolute genius.
Or he can be terrible.
Well,
but
yes,
in
he
those
can.
Big matches, that's when he is at his best.
That's when he's free and
doing that, playing that chaotic tennis. But I think sustaining that over five sets against Nadal, who has a really good draw up to that fourth round and can, I think, play himself into pretty good form, I decided to go with Nadal.
Yeah, same. Second section of the quarterfinals.
Medvedev, Rublev.
Same. Rublev, who has now won two titles in his first two tournaments of the year. I did hesitate about his
burnout,
physical
yeah.
ability to cope.
Same. But then I thought, he's not starting till Tuesday. You get days off at Slams. He's young. And again, his draw, certainly to the third round where he might meet David Goffin, is pretty good. So if he can get through.
Could you imagine him and Goffin?
Oh,
that would be like
ball striking heaven.
Pinball.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it?
I want to see that.
And the big higher seed that would come unstuck here is Alexander Zverev in the fourth round, assuming
yeah.
that Zverev got that far, and it's just a measure of how little faith I think we have in Zverev at the moment, although he has taken care of Rublev when they've played previously.
But Rublev's a better player now, I think, than when yeah. they played. I think they may have played in Shanghai last year and,
yeah.
and Zverev got him, but Rublev is just in such a hot streak of form that it would seem ridiculous to ignore that.
Yeah. And Medvedev, well, he's got Francis Tiafoe first round.
Which is a terrible draw for Tiafoe, who
yes.
last year's quarter finalist here. I mean,
is it a terrible draw for Medvedev?
No, I don't think it is. It's tougher than you might like in the first round, but
interesting that
he can win that.
We've both
sure.
got Medvedev beating either Wawrinka or Isner, who are in likely fourth round opponents.
Yeah, well, Medvedev absolutely tore Isner to pieces at the ATP Cup. I think he handled his serve so sort of alarmingly easily, and he beat that match that Wawrinka played against Medvedev at the US Open. My mind went back to that when I was looking at this draw, and Medvedev didn't seem to be in any kind of physical shape in that match at all, and yet he was able to bamboozle Wawrinka completely tactically. And I think that is one where I think kind of matchup wise that favours Medvedev.
Okay, third quarter, what you got?
I have got, this was another one I crowdsourced on Twitter for who could face Federer. I've got Federer.
I'm not happy about this,
and in the end I've gone Berrettini. More
okay.
because of the lack of anyone else.
He's eighth seed.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not convinced by him because he pulled out of the ATP Cup with an abdominal injury. It's a very, very different place he finds himself in this season, having to, with a bit of a target on his back and having to back up what he did last year.
In the second round, he could play either Tennis Sangren or Marco Trungolitti. Remember him?
Yeah. Two players there who have very different perceptions in the media in terms
yeah.
of the way they've been talked about, for good reason, I think.
Yeah, Tennis Sangren not very popular with many in the media, I think, because of his Twitter activity of a couple of years ago. And Marco Trungolitti, you may remember, was the chap who went off. Where did he go off? And he came back with his grandma in the car.
It was so he was in Barcelona and he was trying to play the French Open.
He got a late lucky loser
yeah.
opportunity, didn't he?
So he drove from Barcelona
winning.
To Paris.
Piled his whole family into his Mini and off he went.
And of course he's been praised for his work in speaking out against match fixing and you know, actually not well, blowing the whistle really on players who had done it
and getting a lot of stick
from fellow players
for doing it, and yet thank goodness he had the wherewithal and, you know, he
courage.
Was prepared to do it. So, yeah, anyway, that's Berrettini's little section. You think Berrettini against Federer.
I thought about Opelka, potentially. I thought about Fanini. I thought about Cioric. I thought about Pella. But in the end, I just went with Berrettini.
Did you at any point question whether Federer would get through to the quarters? Because he's got Dimitrov as a potential fourth round. He's got Shapovalov as a potential fourth round. And he's got Yannick Sinner as a potential fourth round.
Yeah, and he's got Hurkacz as a potential third round.
Right. So did you? So yeah. all the younger blokes.
Yeah, it's interesting. All the top, you know, the big three all seem to have someone in a younger player kind of attached to them in their section. Mm. With Nadal, it's Kyrgios. With Federer, it's Shapovalov and Hurkacz. I did, because I think Shapovalov was really impressive at the ATP Cup, playing grown-up tennis.
Should say, he's the one player, and within minutes of us recording yesterday's show, quotes came out from Shapovalov as really the only player since the new measures and guidelines for how they're going to judge air quality here came in. He was the one who came out and said that I'm really concerned about all this, and I don't want to be, I think he even said, risking my life, risking my health in order to play tennis in conditions where we don't know what sort of effect this is going to have on us.
Yeah, he said he would very definitely consider pulling out if there were similar conditions and he was being forced to play. There were certainly, you know, some people might have thought that yesterday we perhaps accepted what Federer and Nadal and Craig Tiley had said at face value in terms of the new parameters that they have, and the idea being that they clearly did get it wrong on Tuesday. So how much faith can we have in them to get it right now is I think certainly is a legitimate question to ask.
Something Joy Katz on Twitter has said to us, and and we take your view on board. Certainly, I'm quite happy to criticise the way things were handled on Tuesday and Wednesday, and before that actually as well. They were caught on the hop with this, and they thought it was okay to do their work on this behind the scenes and frankly not let anybody know why they were taking the decisions they were taking, and it's not good enough. And they got told that in no uncertain terms by players, by media, and we certainly have that view as well. It is difficult, I'm not an expert in the field, and for me to come and tell Tennis Australia that right now the measurements that they've put in place, which are very clear in terms of the cutoff, for me to say that that's not right, I'm just not qualified enough to do that.
Yeah, same. And we heard, well, again, I'm stressing what Nadal and Federer did say yesterday, but in terms of a threshold, Tennis Australia has gone lower than they have at the Olympics.
Yeah.
So that would suggest that they are kind of erring on the side of caution with it, which is, I think, probably the sensible approach to take.
I've gone Opelka.
You have?
To face Roger Federer.
Fellow giant.
I have to say, I found it really tough, that section as well. I don't have enormous... Berrettini, I've decided not to go with, because I think that back-to-back slams, when you've come on the scene in the way he has, is a stretch, and Fabio Fanini I don't have enough faith in, so it could really be a surprise person. Opelka with that serve I think could squeak through some close matches. We're just going to have to wait and see. So I've got Opelka against Federer in the quarterfinals, which leaves the fourth quarter in that section, Matt, with you choosing who.
This was, I think, of all the quarters in both draws, the one I feel most confident about. Tsitsipas Djokovic. The one stumbling block is Bautista Agut in Tsitsipas's section. That would be a potential fourth round.
Bautista Agut against Feliciano Lopez, first round.
Oh, yeah.
That's quite interesting. Mm. They're best buds, aren't they?
Yeah. But Tsitsipas beat Bautista Agut here last year in the quarterfinals after he'd beaten Federer, which arguably was just even more impressive, the way he backed that up.
Enormously impressive, wasn't it?
And if he managed to do it last year, I think he can do it this year again. So I've got Tsitsipas and Djokovic.
The air quality, I think, will be interesting. I mean, look, it's a shame we're talking about it, but it is a factor. If it does become a factor of real notes, just who it affects and why. And I think that those two, Tsitsipas and Djokovic, could be players that get affected. I just have this feeling, and we've seen it with Djokovic in the past, that he has had difficulty in certain circumstances. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see. So, I mean, I've gone for the same, Tsitsipas and Djokovic, which leaves us with the semi-finals as what?
Team to beat Nadal in the quarters and make the semis.
Oh, dear. That's big, Matt.
I know.
You're backing Rafael Nadal to lose.
Oh, I'm backing team to win.
Who's team playing?
Medvedev to beat Rublev. I must say, the reason I've gone team, there's a big stumbling block for team to even get to the quarters with Kevin Anderson, who looked really good at the ATP Cup. But I remember their match at the US Open in 2018, and team beat Anderson, and that was pretty much at the time team's best win on a hard court.
Mm.
And it felt like something changed, and something had changed, because he then played Rafael Nadal and played really well against him. And I think he's closer to beating Nadal over five sets on a hard court than he is beating him on a clay court.
That's interesting.
And so, yeah, I've just got a good feeling about team this whole year. So I thought, why not start by putting him in to beat Nadal in the quarters and make the semis? You have obviously got Nadal.
I've gone team.
Have you? As well?
Yes.
You were giving me all that jip, I thought.
Well,
you made me make my case.
Ooh,
thunder.
Oh dear, sounds a bit ominous, doesn't it? I've got the same lineup. I've got team against Medvedev in the semis.
Your reasoning for team?
Yeah, similar. I'd not. Oh dear, not really.
I'm not sure about this,
I'd
David.
Not really. is it dangerous having electronic equipment out underneath a thunderstorm? Anyway, let's crack on. We've got about another 4 minutes to go in the podcast. I feel that what he needs to do is hit his straps with those ground strokes and have faith in them. You know, he needs to be able to go for it and know they're going in. In the first match of the year, there was no confidence in him to do that. When he's at his best, that comes, but it's repetition with him.
And I think I've seen him play so well against Nadal so many times.
Yeah.
A lot of it, best of three on clay. Obviously, that one I mentioned at the US Open, best of five. Even last year's French Open final, for two sets, team was hitting out with that confidence that you were talking about. And match-up-wise, Nadal doesn't seem like such a bad one for team.
No, I'm going for that. I also think Nadal, there is some residue from his exertions over the last few months. And yeah, I think the way you've put it, we always think of team as a better clay court player than a hard court player, but Nadal is an even better clay court player than he is a hard court
Nadal
player.
Nadal on clay is in a completely different category, even to someone as great as team.
Yeah. Okay, so your other semi-final is?
Federer Djokovic.
Okay, so you've got...
I've got Federer to beat
Berrettini. Beat Opelka, which I've gone for.
And then I've got Djokovic to beat Tsitsipas. What have you got, David?
I've got Federer Tsitsipas. So I've chosen Stefanos Tsitsipas to beat Novak Djokovic, which... I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but it's just... I feel this could be the tournament. where the breakthroughs happen. I think on the men's side, I think this is the one, because I think that they are not that far away, even though they haven't been getting there. I think Tsitsipas at the Australian Open showed what he can do last year. He's backed it up since. Same with Thiem, same with Medvedev. And I think this ATP Cup could end up being a factor.
Particularly for Djokovic.
For Djokovic. Mm. I just think sustaining your best, because he was imperious at the ATP Cup. He was Australian Open level at the ATP Cup. And I think he found it so interesting how candid he was about that in the press conference today. Look, it could go the other way, because the other way is he's absolutely played himself into form. He's just going to destroy everybody. And that's perfectly possible.
Yeah. I edge slightly more towards that. I don't think he'll destroy everyone, but I think he will carry on the form he was showing at the ATP Cup. I've got him against Federer. I think could be an absolute epic against Tsitsipas. But for Tsitsipas to beat Djokovic again, it's the five sets is such an important factor in this. We have seen them do it at Masters level. But the brand of tennis Tsitsipas play, he's pretty much going to have to peak for at least three of those sets, playing aggressive tennis.
But he's such an animal of an athlete as well, isn't he?
He absolutely is, but so is Djokovic.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be interesting. Okay, so what's your final?
So my final is Thiem. Thiem to beat Medvedev against Djokovic. Djokovic to beat Federer, purely just the fact that
he always beats Federer
over five sets.
Yeah.
Going with that.
I've got Medvedev against Tsitsipas. I've got Tsitsipas to go Djokovic and Federer back-to-back wins.
Gosh.
And I did...
Is that...
Listen to that. That's what Mother Nature thinks of that.
I mean,
I know that... this is getting a bit worrying out here. I know that... That's
a superhuman feat.
He beat him here last year, and I really did hover over Federer beating him this time, because I think that is perfectly possible that Tsitsipas beats one of them and then Federer just takes over and mops up the scraps.
Mm.
I think that is perfectly possible. But Tsitsipas has just got... He's such a ravenous athlete. He wants it so much that I think he isn't like everybody else. Mm. He isn't just going to win a match and just think, job done. No, that's one of the steps. Now I'm going to take the other step. And when you saw him beat him at the O2, there aren't many athletes that go head-to-head with Federer and make Federer look like that. Tsitsipas just looks like version 2.0 physically.
I agree. I just think that matchup, from what we've seen so far, Federer-Tsitsipas, is all about whether Federer can execute on the big points. Because last year here at the Australian Open, he created, I think, 10 break points, didn't take any of them. And at the O2, I think it was 16 and took one.
Mm.
He is able to read Tsitsipas's serve, Federer, and get into his service games. But there's something blocking him from really executing on those big points. Now, he did it when they played in Dubai and when they played in Basel. And
When
it doesn't matter quite so much. And
it's we're talking levels here.
Sure. And in both those matches, he took Tsitsipas to the cleaners, really. I mean, he looked like he's got even more options in his game than someone like Tsitsipas. It was kind of the best of Federer. So, I mean, I don't think that match is going to happen because I've got Djokovic.
But you're wrong, because it will happen. Okay, so who's winning your title then?
Djokovic beating Thiem in the final.
That would be a cracking final to watch. I would like to see that.
Your final is also cracking.
Yeah, Medvedev's beating Tsitsipas.
With their history as well.
Yeah.
Oh, Medvedev beating Tsitsipas.
Yeah.
Hang on, Medvedev?
Yeah. Why does that surprise you?
I'm just confused by your position on Medvedev. I don't know whether you really rate him or think that it was all a hot streak.
I really rate him, but I think it could go either way with him. I think he... And actually, the press conference he gave yesterday just gave me confidence in him as an athlete that is going to not just leave it where it is. But I'm sort of waiting as well to find out what other players do with him, because usually you find that these very top players will figure out a little weakness. I noticed I was looking up his head-to-head against Federer, and he's lost two very one-sided matches against Federer. And I wonder what his, you know, I'd quite like to see that match up now that Medvedev is who he is.
Yeah.
You know, in the future, but maybe we will. So we've both got Serena Williams winning the title. I've got Medvedev winning the men's title. Matt has got Djokovic beating Team. Oh dear. In the final.
Might be our cue, David.
Thank goodness, folks. We're going to have to get out of here. Catherine Whittaker is about to board a plane, folks. She is on her way to Melbourne. So whether she'll be here with us in time to record tomorrow night, we don't really know, because she doesn't land until about midnight, which is probably when the play's about to start. We are expecting thunderstorms tomorrow. This is the first of them, it would appear. And what's the order of play, quickly?
Rod Laver, Arena, Osaka, Buzkova, Potapova, Serena, Steve Johnson, Federer, and then night session, Ash Barty, Serenko, Struff Djokovic,
I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, and the data analyst, Craig O'Shaughnessy, who worked with Djokovic for a while, is now working with Jan-Lennard Struff.
Oh, right. Is he not working with Djokovic anymore?
No.
Oh.
He's working with Struff and Berrettini, I read earlier today.
Oh.
So, good test of his credentials, whether he can devise a game plan to beat Djokovic.
Wonder what happened.
I doubt it.
Okay. Very interesting.
And then Margaret Court Arena, Denis Shapovalov, Martin Fucsovics, Katerina Siniakova, Petra Kvitova, and then the big headline match of the day, Venus Williams, Coco Gauff. Which
incidentally, you may remember I was saying a couple of days ago I didn't think Venus Williams was going to play. She tweeted today, Venus Williams, it's how you finish and how you start, and I'm ready to start.
So she's playing.
So it appears she's playing. So I got it wrong, which is great. I'm delighted, and let's hope that match does happen.
And I think a lot of people thought that would probably be a night session match. It's day session, which makes it better for West Coast in America, certainly, but East Coast it's still going to be pretty late there. And then night session is Tsitsipas and Caruso and Sloane Stephens, Zhang Shuai, which is probably okay. Upset alert there.
Rightio, well, there's loads happening, and there's British players, there's Dan Evans, there's I think Joe Konta, Kyle Edmund all playing tomorrow. We'll have live coverage on BBC Radio 5 Live if you're in the UK. Commentary on Sports Extra, I'll be on that. Matt and I will be getting together for a podcast straight after play tomorrow and every day here at the Australian Open, because Australian Open dailies are here, and they are here to stay. Catherine Whittaker is on her way. She'll be joining us as well. We can't thank you enough for your support of our Kickstarter, which has enabled Matt to fly here and have accommodation for a couple of weeks. Same with Catherine. Three of our backers require a shout out, and that's Mark Rudayev, Paul Bullock, and Peter Noon, who have all backed us at the shout out level on our Kickstarter, which you can still get for the next 10 hours or so as we come to you right now from Melbourne. But our Kickstarter for 2020 is closing, so if you want to support the show, time to get in there and do so if you've left it to the last minute, because you're as organized as me. Well, it's about time to get your act together. So thank you all for your support. Sign up to our newsletter. All of the details of what I'm talking about, the link to Kickstarter, the link to the newsletter, are all in the show notes. If you scroll down on your phone right now, you'll be able to click and follow those. So you can sign up to the newsletter. You can also sign up to our community on Reddit, who've been very, very useful. Tennis podcast listeners getting together and having chats about the show and about the sport and revealing all they know about Radu Albot and his Reddit history.
Yes, my question's been answered.
Yeah.
He did a series of AMAs, Ask Me Anythings.
Which I've said I'll do on there one day.
and it just generally interacted with fans.
I just need to learn how it works. Carry on.
Catherine's on. Catherine,
yeah, she's on.
Catherine has a username. I'm very much a lurker on Reddit at the moment. But yeah, he did a series of Ask Me Anythings, interacted with fans, and gave some tickets away, actually, I think in Miami. And so they support him in the same way that he's kind of supported them.
Reddit's Radu Albot. Okay. So that's that, and we're going to be back tomorrow with another edition of the Tennis Podcast. Thanks for listening to us. Make sure you tell everybody you know, family, friends, doctors, nurses, people in the street, people that serve you at dinner. Just tell them about the Tennis Podcast and that they should listen to us. And we'll be back tomorrow with more of this nonsense. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.